and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Greetings, greetings. Hello? I guess I have a little feedback here, but I'll work through it. Hello, greetings everyone. Hope everyone is doing well today. Today is June 6, 2017, and we are the Code Breakers. I am D, and I have T and Paradox. Just want to do a sound check really, really quick, fellas. Are you guys on? Live and present? All right. T, what about you? All right. Coming through loud and clear. Good, good, good. And I guess I want to go ahead and give out our information really, really quick. We could be reached on Twitter at CodeBreakers191. Please feel free to drop your thoughts, concerns, feelings, or, you know, if you have any complaints or any other feedback that you would like to give us, anything about our program, or if you want to even just inform us about anything that got to do with racism, white supremacy, please give us a shout out. We would appreciate it greatly. We are open to feedback here. Also, we can be reached at, I think it's Code Breakers 1865, Paradox? Keep me honest on it.
Yeah.
Codebreakers 1865@gmail.com.
The email
address where we could be reached at.
Codebreakers1999@gmail.com.
Okay, Codebreakers1999@gmail.com. Same thing. You could please reach out. Any questions, concerns, gripes, all that good stuff. Please feel free to reach out to us. Today's program, we have actually came up with a title called Chaos or Community. Chaos or Community. 50 years ago, in 1967, Dr. King wrote his masterpiece. That's what I call it, because it's one of those hidden gems that people do not widely discuss when it comes down to Dr. King. And I think I know why, because of how he came to the realization of how big the problem of racism, white supremacy was towards the end of his lifetime. And I like to give a actual quote from the book. It's one of the last statements that he basically wrote down, kind of like a summary of what he came to realize during his time on this planet and what his realization was. And here's the quote. "We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with a lost opportunity. This may well be mankind's last chance to choose between chaos or community. Some of our discussion points, you know, after such a deep quote by Dr. King, Philosopher King is the way I like to look at him, because I look at him more of a philosopher than I do a reverend now, just doing a little bit more studying, and I have to say that I have grown immense respect for Dr. King and his work and some of his intellectual prowess that gets overlooked a lot, especially with his whole theme about nonviolence and what his thought pattern was. So I guess we can kind of get into the quote that I just listed. Do you guys have any? What do you guys feel when you hear that quote from Dr. King when he dropped it over 50 years ago? That basically, you know, stating that it can be, there is a such thing as too late, as being too late. Like, that's the most profound sentence. When I look at this quote, it just hits me so hard, because, you know, we have a host of people that discuss this problem of racism, and it appears to be something that we're discussing, but we're not getting any traction on, and there are a lot of reasons for that. My main assumption, or my main thought on it, would be that basically the main reason why we have so much confusion about racism and white supremacy is due to there's a lack of understanding when it comes down to how the system acts and how the system works. So do you guys have any comments about the quote that I just listed from Dr. King to get this program started? Any feelings?
I don't really have anything. Perhaps put it in context. That was 50 years ago, 1967.
Yes, sir.
Civil rights era. And he's saying that, very, very prophetic, obviously. He's saying that this may well be mankind's last chance to choose between chaos or community. And he's saying this in 1967. So when he's saying this may well be mankind's last chance, is he referencing, I'm assuming, is he referencing, I don't want to assume, but is he referencing the, what during that time frame, if you can give some perspective on it, is he referencing? Just to put it, juxtapose it against today.
Well, basically, what he came down to the realization of at that particular time, Dr. King has dealt with the big problem of the military complex, which is the U.S. government, and how they outsource violence across the world. And, you know, at that time, imperialism was the rule of the day, post-World War II. He also described how capitalism as a system was going to pretty much tear America apart due to how the system operates, and especially when the root of the actual system itself is based off racism, white supremacy. He was basically trying to give an out to the betterment of mankind, that the logical thing to do is to strive towards justice, to strive towards giving, you know, equality for different people, for people that have been oppressed in this particular country. And of course, we see how that has actually worked out. So it's basically all of that. He was pretty much just stating that the way the things are working now, that the course may be too, the system may become too big to overcome, and that's where I'm at as far as like the way that people describe solutions. It's always like this fail-safe or this like this aha moment, like I got the answers to solving the biggest problem on the planet when it comes down to the nine areas of people activity. And what normally ends up happening is people end up blaming other victims or other people that are stuck into this particular system for the reasons why we're not outside, why we're not actually able to correct ourselves within this particular system and actually defeat it. So I think that's what he was basically saying, that if we don't get a hold of this soon, that it will basically become too big for us to overcome, and that the system would just basically become chaotic. It would eat itself, which is basically what we're seeing right now, in my humble opinion. But I could be incorrect.
I did want to point out that the Vietnam War was also going on during that time.
Yes, sir.
We know that Kennedy was assassinated, I believe, 4 years prior. So they were starting investigations into that. The Aretha Franklin released the single Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Just try to, I guess put it in a more historical context about what was going on at the time, because I'm sure not everyone on this call was born around that time to witness the event. So I'm just mentioning that to try to bring more context to his statements, but I think it's key considering the prophetic statement that he made. I mean, and this is 50 years ago. And consider that we, even back then, he considered that we were late.
Right.
And procrastinators. Yeah. So I'm sure there's a lot more going on. I don't want to take too much time on that, but go ahead.
Paradox, you got anything that you wanted to kind of discuss on the whole thought pattern of chaos or community?
Yeah, I agree. I pretty much agree with everything just stated.
I meant to mention too.
Go ahead.
No, I just meant to mention that Muhammad Ali also refused military service that year. So go ahead.
So I'd like to move on. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick just that when he said we are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today, we are faced with the fact that tomorrow is today.
Mm-hmm.
We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. So he's saying we are now faced with the fact, so the reality in a sense, that today is tomorrow, or tomorrow is today, and that we're confronted with fierce urgency of the now, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, in this unfolding conundrum of life and history, and I think that I hear all the scholars speak, all the everyday person speak, people who, when someone is getting jail time, or someone is being murdered, or someone is being lynched, or someone is being forced to go to war, or someone is being pushed out of their neighborhood, or someone land being taken from them. I think about the unfolding conundrum of life and history. Tomorrow is today, the urgency of the now. And then he says, there is a such thing as being too late. And I think that in my opinion is very scary. You know, there is a such thing. There is a such thing as being too late. What's interesting is that, you know, I try to think to myself, you know, what, you know, where is his mind in a sense of when he's making these statements? You know, what do you think? Oh, I wonder to myself, you know, what is he thinking about? Who is he speaking of as a group? I know he says words like mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever and whatever the hell that is. And then the words chaos and the word community. You know, trying to define, you know, what does chaos mean? And what does community mean? And if you insert the word black, specifically, what does the word black mean, or a black community, or some of the just the general thoughts that come to me? Because, you know, I don't want to keep repeating it over and over again, but it's just interesting thinking about, you know, today is tomorrow, and just trying to really process. It's really philosophy, you know. At the end of the day, I mean, it's interesting because,
you know, I put
about the challenges of life and history, and the possibility that some of the things people are doing in general. How is it futile? Is it you know? How do you start to really try to scrutinize? Is what you're doing efficient? Is it effective? And not necessarily even anyone having to judge themselves, but just thinking about what is the future, if there is a future, what could that potentially look like, and what are some of the things that can drive you there? Because if you start talking about if it's too late, that gets very interesting. But I'll stop right there.
Let me give you a little bit more insight, and this is alluding to what you were saying, T, of how contextual he is, but the man was a genius. Like, I don't, you know, I won't let anybody tell me about Dr. Martin Luther King and he was this coon or he was this sellout, or he capitulated to white people. Like, you know, you need to get more informed. Like, I'm not going to call you no name. I'm not going to disrespect you, but, you know, I just can't allow you to just be around me and disrespect this man anymore. Like, that's just not going to happen. You're talking to somebody that used to think that way. But let me just give you just an idea of how ahead of the curve that he was. And this can be basically written today. This is what one of the quotes are from the book. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look at thousands of working people displaced from their jobs with reduced incomes as a result of automation, while the profits of the employers remain intact, and say, this is not just. It will look across the oceans and see individual capitalists of the West, white supremacy, investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of those countries, and say, this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm and filling our nation homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped, psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. America, the richest and most powerful nation in the world, can well lead the way in this revolution of values. There is nothing to prevent us from paying adequate wages to school teachers, social workers, and other servants of the public to ensure that we have the best available personnel in these positions, which are charged with the responsibility of guiding our future generations. There is nothing but a lack of social vision to prevent us from paying adequate wage to every American citizen, whether he be a hospital worker, laundry worker, maid, or day laborer. There is nothing except short-sightedness to prevent us from guaranteeing an annual minimum and livable income for every American family. There is nothing except a tragic death wish to prevent us from reordering our priorities so that the pursuit of peace would take precedent over the pursuit of war. There is nothing to keep us from remolding recondrent status quo with bruised hands until we have fashioned it into a brotherhood. Martin Luther King Jr., where do we go from here? Chaos or community? I mean, just
that's heavy. I tell you. I just say this real quickly.
1967. He's talking about automation. Now, what do people talk about these days? What do people talk about these days? About losing jobs, right?
I would tell you this. There's so much honesty in it, just because everyone who's listening just got to get more serious, because it's just game. That's all I'm hearing. You know, just running game, right? You really got to know what these people really are, what their real goals are, their real plans are. I tell you that, 50 years, wow. But everything he said is where we are now, right? That's still where we are. People still asking for all these things, but, you know, like I told you before, these are warmongers. They have a whole other plan in place. And I think it's something totally, you know, at the highest level, we all, I think people kind of know it. To be honest with you, I don't think anyone is, let me not say it that way. They do a very good job of you not really feeling it. I'll put it that way, right? And I think technology probably plays a lot of role in that, a lot of roles. I think technology plays such a role that you don't personally have to sacrifice. You know, they don't need a massive military, apparently. They don't need a massive draft. They don't need a draft of some sort at this point up until today, maybe tomorrow. It's interesting because I think technology helps them maintain their power globally. Maybe, I don't know. This is my thought, but I stop right there.
First discussion point that I would like to discuss: why our solutions never work against racism, white supremacy. Is this problem too big for victims of racism to fix? Or are we too driven to keep this system alive to actually solve this problem? Let me just state on record, I know that there are a lot of victims of racism. Yeah, I call people that are not white victims of racism for one particular reason, because I don't believe in name calling. Most likely your views are going to differ from mine, so that way we can keep it respectable. VGQ. A lot of times when I hear people discuss solutions in the system of racism and white supremacy, it's like a lot of times I'm hearing them speak as if white people don't exist. And what do I mean by that? All we need to do is do this. All we need to do is do that. All we need to do is just pull our resources together, build up this, build up an economy so they can't attack us. And as I read Chaos and Community, Chaos or Community, Dr. King is fully aware of how big this problem is.
Let me hold you right there though for 1 second. What you just said is, it needs to be, what you just said is very important. Living in empires, people who topple nations, who manage nations.
I don't think they understand. I don't think people understand it.
You got to stop playing with yourself. Obvious. That's what it's called. It's called playing with yourself. But I'll hold right there. Go ahead.
So, This is done with love. We're not here to squash people's dreams. Everybody has to survive in the system. We're fully aware of that. But call it what it is. Be more honest. We are in a system of racism, white supremacy. Either the system exists or it doesn't. Either what we're talking about on this program, we're crazy, we're delusional, or we're basically insane and we're giving it more power than what it is. See, because when I hear victims say, well, you're giving it more power than what it is, you're giving it, and I'm just like, for us, I mean, literally, I just want people to just think about this for a second. You are talking about apparatus machine, a machine. People that terrorize other nations. What did they call that bomb that they dropped recently? What was it called? The big megaton. What was it? Just for fun.
I'm
just saying, just for fun. I mean, do you understand the gravity of this? Like, let me just get this out, because I'm gonna step back, because I know that it's going to bother people, but this is not a game. Like, the stuff that we're dealing with on the local level, that's one thing. But believe it or not, if you get on the radar, just like if anything else, you will be handled. I mean, you got to look at the whole thing of everybody call it the so-called wake-up call, like how we get glad when certain black people, the so-called sold out the black community, get this so-called wake-up call. No, that's just white power. That's just white supremacy flexing its muscle. Bill Cosby, Tiger Woods, Red Fox, Sammy Davis Jr. I don't care who the person is or how they reveled, how they looked at you in high esteem. It doesn't matter. All access, all roads leads to the same place. It's just like Mr. Fuller says, the logic is irrefutable. It's just the logic. It's just if I keep asking questions and I keep going to your pain point, it's going to lead to the same place. Where do you get your capital from? Where? Is there any other ways of getting your capital without having these white people attached to it? I don't care if it's Bitcoin, cryptocurrency. I mean,
they set the rate.
Everything leads to the same place, and I'm not trying to crush. I'm not doing that. Please hear me out. All I'm saying is we need to be more empathetic for the victims that are struggling more than we are right now. That is my point. We can't talk about other victims that are not doing as well as some of us people that are teetering on being where they're at right now. And suggestion. Go ahead, man. And before I just say something that's going to be too crazy.
No, don't stop. When you said something, you just made me think about who sets value, who sets price, who structures the market, who develops, who sets up everything. Because, again, it's their system. But, you know, I think you probably would want to give people a little bit of hope and think of, say, what could potentially happen. Like, you would have to say stuff like, what potentially happened is, say if, like, Eastern nations, you know, joined together, broke off from the West, or say if you have some internal fractures in the West, those are your opportunities. But understanding what that looks like generally is going to be absolute collapse of some sort, and then you having to figure out how to reestablish. Those are the things you're looking for, because that's going to happen inevitably. It's going to happen. So I just think that people have to understand, generally speaking, that's not necessarily where you at, but that's where I'm at, as far as, and it may not happen today, and it may not happen 100 years from now, but just being preparing your family, and just having, and we're going to continue to say this, obviously, but just being prepared, you know, read, study, pay attention, be aware, have some skill set. Just to deal with the environment as it changes, as it develops. And, you know, if you need to get in where you get in, you know, get what you got to get. So, I mean, you know, that's what it's going to be. But, you know, really outside of that, understanding that, you know, it's a strange thing in a sense to say that we're in a very strange situation, because I honestly have to tell people I don't really know what's going on. You know, the more I get clarity, the foggier things get. I don't really understand what's going on. You know, I understand people who came to this land. I understand to some degree, based off of behavior, you know, what they're trying to accomplish, and I guess you could say have accomplished. What I don't know is that how many white people who consider themselves white, how many of those people that live on this landmass, and even in I guess would you call it Eastern Asia, or would you call it Northern Africa, or would you call it Europe? You know, I don't know. But anyway, whatever you want to call that landmass, if those people decide at some point to, you know, to feel threatened from people of color globally, you know, and they're already doing things clearly, right? From, you know, from Ebola, AIDS, I mean, we have a whole list of things that they're already managing now. Will they turn things up even more to deal with population growth? Et cetera, et cetera. And then what are some of their, you know, you can have some massive responses, even starting some, you know, starting a larger war, and you put people of color on the front lines to cut through 10, 20, 30 million people, 50 million people, or you find other avenues around that, sterilization, et cetera. So those are some things that we just have to kind of watch and be prepared for, because I think really we should be looking at insulation, protection, understanding, and just being aware and having some skill sets to try to protect ourselves as best we can against a massive, murderous, bloody military. But I'll stop right there.
You know, one of the primary problems that we face in the system of racism and white supremacy is, because I know we had a couple points that we were covering, one being ego, and another being solutions, is that when someone examines the totality, the sheer power and the magnitude of this empire, what it's capable of, what it's done historically, and what it is currently doing, it can be overwhelming for some individuals, especially if they have an inflated ego. One of the constant things that I try to do for myself is to humble myself. It's something that is an everyday process, and it's not easy, and it's almost like you have to check yourself constantly, because when you get wrapped up in the ego, you can start to perhaps forget the magnitude of this empire and what it's capable of. Just to give you, for instance, in 2009, if anybody remembers this, NASA literally shot a missile, I think it was 49 million pounds is the price of the missile. They shot it at the moon to find out there was water there. A massive missile, mind you. And I say that to say this, to drive home the fact that, I mean, at this point, the empire is starting to become, I guess you'd call, interstellar. So it's gone beyond Earth and actually looking to go beyond Earth to seek out other places that can be conquered and exploited. So my point is that oftentimes if we try to stress to other individuals the power of the empire, what it's capable of, they take it as an attack on them. Or what they're trying to do. And like DC alluded to, we are trying to survive within the system. So, you know, I guess my thing is, if someone is telling you these things about this empire, is to try to look at it objectively and not get caught up in the fact that you may feel some way personally about it and feel that that person is actually propagating and making the empire more powerful. Because the fact of the matter is, you're dealing with the ideology. And when you're dealing with ideology, I guess the best example that I could give would be a religion. So how can you, because racism, white supremacy is an ideology, it's a belief, and it's backed up by action, ultimately military action. So how do you attack an ideology? How can you get someone who's in a religion, they are a zealot, and I don't mean to use that in an offensive way, but if you look up the definition, it'll explain it more. But someone who's a zealous, religious zealot, how do you convince them to come out of that religion? An answer to that, I think most times, would be you can't. It's something that you might be able to talk to them, maybe plant seeds here and there, but ultimately, they have to be the ones to make that decision. It brings to mind Jim Jones and his murder down there in, what was that, Guyana, South America? And, right. So, yes, so, you know, dealing with people in ideology, and so someone who looks like you, that's brown skin, light skin, whatever the case may be, but who would be forced into classification of black, may ascribe subconsciously or consciously to the ideology of racism, white supremacy. And so they're essentially a representative of that, an advocate, whether they know it or not, because it is such a strong ideology. And I'll wrap up. But one of the things I think that obviously the U.S. empire is fighting is the ideology of Islam, especially what they have dubbed as Islam, because it is at its core, I think, anti everything that they want to do or plan to do as far as opening up new markets or expanded capital, what have you. But it is anti a lot of the things that they want to do. And so one of the things that they do is, well, I guess two of the strategies that they have, and maybe it's something that we can learn from, not sure what that will lead to. I kind of leave that to be taken off air and for people to discuss among themselves, what have you. But one thing they do, which we really don't, so-called black people don't have the access to, is they'll bomb the hell out of you. They figure if they, you know, the ideologies are hard to get rid of.
Absolutely.
So they're extremely hard to get rid of. So I guess they figure if they bomb the hell out of you, your nation, your people, you kill off enough of you, then we can start to thin out that ideology, and maybe the second and third generations that come up without parents, without certain structures that normally were directional guideposts in their society, then they'll be more accepting of what we want to do, and we don't impose our ideology. Which leads to the second point, with imposing the ideology is another way is to use propaganda. So propagandizing people through mass media, news, print, TV, movies, and indoctrinating them that way, similar to how a religious text would do, or a religious leader. And so I think that's what ultimately we're faced with, is fighting in ideology and strong beliefs backed up by action. And so I guess if we look at it that way, that's some way, maybe some way we can start to get ahead and not get so wrapped up in the fact that when people do discuss things that so-called black people are doing to try to combat it, that they don't get wrapped up in the ego and become offended by it.
I will also say, I think that we're doing solutions. I would never use the word solutions never work. I get where you're going with the question, but I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with it in that way. when you say racism, white supremacy, I don't really know, you know, to what degree are you speaking of? Because I think that, you know, to give us, you know, for us to have the ability to function and survive in this environment is possibly some sort of strange solution in itself. So when you say solutions, are you talking about like mathematical solutions? And then you say against racism, are you talking about which degree of racism are you speaking of?
Break that down, that mathematical piece. Cause that's interesting.
Solving the problem of racism. So when I hear people, let's just take it piece by piece. So what's some of the solutions that you hear out are here in the stratosphere in the community of people that are so called woke? What are some of the things that you hear that are, when people say get to the solutions, what is the solution? What do you offer to solve the problem?
The quick stuff is, the real quick trail off the top stuff is economics, pool your money together.
Stop right there. Just okay. Give me a moment, because I want to kind of give an illustration, because this is perfect. Because what doesn't happen a lot of times is what it's tied to. See, that's why, because I fall in line with Martin Luther King's thinking. I understand exactly what he's come to the realization of. Because, see, without rising up the domestic worker, the laborer, the trash person, the person, he died doing the Poor People's Campaign. He was in Memphis, Tennessee, about to basically speak on behalf of those, you know how you see those old pictures where those black males are there sitting with a sign saying, "I am a man." He's talking about garbage workers trying to get them paid a livable wage. And of course, since they were black people, of course they were not paid, you know, up to par as far as not, you know, being done in the system of racism, white supremacy. So economics is very, 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 very cognizant. What is it connected to? We know this. What is economics tied to?
The people who set it up,
Not just that.
Military.
Right. And to have a military is to do what? Conquest, right? To take. We already talked about ideology. So the system of racism, white supremacy, and I agree, is an ideological system based off color, right?
Religion.
Based off mistreatment. Right. Religion. Religion is repetitive, something that is going to be ingrained into children that come after us.
The most powerful religion on the planet.
Right. That's the reason why kids sit in class and say, "I pledge allegiance to the flag." But that's a prayer. You're praying to the country, to the flag. That's why people get offended when you don't stand for it. With Colin Kaepernick, the whole thing about, if you look at the whole Colin Kaepernick situation, it proves itself. It describes itself. This man didn't rape nobody. He ain't hit no woman. He ain't done any brutality to anybody. There's people in the NFL that's killed people, raped women, beat up folks. I mean, you know, he took a knee based off injustice, right? He's saying that I want the flag to uphold the values and the standards that basically that is supposed to be upheld to. That's what we're supposed to be doing. I'm holding you to your standard.
Everything you just said is ridiculous.
I know that.
And he said he was there for the flag once they saved justice.
That's the point.
Look, I don't know that much, but it's funny you say it to me now. It's just funny. But anyway, go ahead. My bad.
No, but I'm saying, people say, well, economics, right? If I'm not mistaken,
not
right?
From that's, all, that's I'm saying from, I give you the rest of the minute. Go ahead.
No. But it's education, right? Get yourself educated.
Education, economics, politics, organizing.
So let's talk about Let's talk about economics. So what happens to certain black communities? What's happening to black communities all around the country?
Well, the thing is that they set the problem is, I mean, there's a lot of complexity to a lot of this stuff, honestly, but it's really value setting. It's really value. It's not only value setting, but it's also gentrification. It's also eminent domain. It's also state and federal laws that are in place, and things are structured in a way for major corporations to do X, Y, and Z. I mean,
so they gentrify. They gentrify neighborhoods. They gentrify neighborhoods, right? Which means that you need ordinance. You need city. You need city.
The machine is constantly running. But yeah, that's just a natural. Right. It's a natural flow of the American process. So
economics
too as well. So. Anyway,
economics include you keep them moving. Economics include politics too, right? So you have you have politics, and then you have laws connected to this.
Yeah, because politics is sort of like it's a part of the implementation process. But that's
right.
How you start to implement a lot of those processes. Yeah,
the hand.
It has to seem correct. It has to seem like what's happening is a normal thing that you've been conditioned to process and understand. It cannot be foreign to you, or that's where you get reactions. So it has to be very, very normal. But go ahead.
So while you're giving all your energy to that, which means that you're still trying to support racism, white supremacy, the one thing that we're not dealing with is the total ideology of this country. We just act like it doesn't happen.
Every single black person on the planet is supporting white supremacy,
right?
Either consciously or unconsciously. For the most part, you have a few outliers there, obviously.
The system demands your participation. T just alluded that they bomb the hell out of you if you don't participate. Until the children that you have left, the orphans that are left, we'll educate them, we'll give them good clothes, we'll give them good food, and we'll put them in Silicon Valley so they can work for us now and support the system of racism, white supremacy, and speak English and be nice people. I mean, this system is brutal, man. Literally. This extremely brutal.
It's very efficient. It's very effective, and it has developed the entire planet. I don't know. You know, This is the thing. We have to understand. Human capital is expendable, but it's important at this point. So, I mean, that's just a fact. So, if you want to practice capitalism, if you want to do it, which we do. You have to understand, it's land destruction. It's moving human beings. It's destroying things and rebuilding things. It's taking countries, toppling them, rebuilding them. That's the process. So death is a natural process within this system. And all of us who support the system, you can pretend that you don't know that's what's happening, but they're killing people right now for you. NSA,
so if
FBI,
I have,
CIA,
if I have
all
a system,
other, the alphabet soup stuff.
If I have a system of racism.
Go ahead.
Quick question. If I believe that there's a system of racism, white supremacy, which a lot of black people do, right? A lot of us believe that there is a such thing as racism out here. But we don't believe in the big boogeyman. But check this out. If I had an actual system of racism, white supremacy, right? And I'm here to manage the planet. And the primary goal is to ensure that white people remain on top. Everybody else is on the bottom. And we're going to use them for their labor and their resources accordingly to the system that we have set forth. And our way of doing things is the best way. That's how we get things done on this particular planet. Because on this particular planet, we're interdependent species. We are not independent people. Literally, we're interdependent. So that independent thing don't exist outside of basically handling your own feelings and your actions. But to get things done, you need other people involved. One person can't build a building. One person can't build a community. That doesn't exist. And see, what Dr. King came down to the realization of is that this thing can get so big. Even President, is a President Eisenhower that basically talked about the military complex becoming too large? Like, he spoke to the country. Like, you need to check us before we get too big, because if this happens, before you know it, this machine gets rolling. There's no stopping this. It's going to continue to eat. It's going to continue to grow.
Look, when he said it was already too late, by the way.
But that's what I'm saying about tomorrow is today. right?
Exactly.
Forward 50 years down, and then we can kind of go into Mr. Fuller's clip, and then we can go into the break. Before 50 years into the future, you have victims extremely confused about racism, white supremacy. You got people that you got racial police, people to say, well, you ain't really black, I'm a black person, you ain't really straight African, ain't none of us 100%, but we talking about who's black and who's not. Confusion. Like blackness was not forced upon us. We're talking about you know, you doing this and this and that other, but you keeping us back. This people that's on TV by white people, by the way, right? Is there a black person that owns a TV station outside of Oprah? And then if Oprah owned that particular station, don't she have handlers?
Discovery owns that. She don't really
own that. But I'm saying, I know how people would say, well, Oprah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, she don't own it 100%. I mean, that's just not how things work anyway.
But that's what I'm saying.
Collaboration and stuff, yeah.
What I'm saying is everything's interconnected. You can't have somebody just singular sitting out here by themselves without having an underbelly of people.
It's very, like me and you talk about all the time. In 1710 in America, yeah, sure. Before it was America, obviously. But, you know, yeah. But now, no. It does, things don't really work. I mean, someone can email us and show me a company or conglomerate that, well, clearly conglomerates are interconnected, but show me, it's almost impossible. I don't think it exists at all. Even privatized companies still have some relationships, you know what I'm saying, but go ahead, my bad.
No, but I mean, basically, if the system of racism and white supremacy is an ideological system, we have agreed, we have basically said, this is something that needs to be basically stomped out, and it needs participation for it to survive. It's almost like that's the fuel. Because to believe in the ideology means that you go, you're supporting it, you're all in into it, so you believe that it works to a certain degree. So my argument is, there are a lot of victims of racism that basically believe that the system of racism, white supremacy, is the correct way of doing things. They just want to be in charge. That's my synopsis. They believe that they would do a better job of being in charge of this war machine, by the way. Like, this war machine, by the way. Like, nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about the killing. That's what I'm saying. Nobody talks about the killing, the murder, the mass murders, the people that that are homeless because of America, the refugees that are created because of America. Like, nobody speaks to that.
No, you want your internet. You want your sneakers. You want your cars. You want to do your what do they call it? You know, do your church thing. You want to do your politics thing. You want to participate in the way you think you should do it, and to somehow to cover and mask what you just said. No, I don't really care what you're doing in this environment. That's ultimately what's happening to the rest of the world and within this world as well.
Do you remember Colonel Jessup?
Very interesting that. The rejection of this is not at a higher rate. I am surprised by that. But one thing I know you don't. I think this goes back 3,500 years or longer. By the way, I think this is ultimately the evolution of that. By the way, I just want to throw that in there too. This is not a new thing in the sense that whiteness is a new thing, 300 years, 20 years old, and they've evolved that process. But it seems to be interconnected with historical empires as well. So anyway.
You have anything, T, you want to add?
No, that's all good. Wow. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you have.
Are we deep diving today?
Yeah, I mean, the thing of it is that to maintain the system, we have no idea how much bloodshed needs to take place. Actually, it's taking place and has taken place over however long it's gone on. And so if so-called black people were to take over the system, this system, I'm not even sure that the large population of so-called black people that need to run it and maintain it would carry out the type of actions that the current people who fight right now. Just the amount of bloodshed is what I'm saying. You know, just thinking about if that were in fact were to happen, what that would look like. If all of a sudden tomorrow, so-called black people were left to run this system. That's thinking about that at length. It's from military to economic, political. I think we have the religious piece down to some extent. What else do we have? Education. Probably would fare pretty well there. Labor, law. So there are a lot of things that we would have to consider. And then when all the books were opened up, so to speak, and we actually see all the dirty, secret things that go on behind closed doors that we don't actually, the mass populace doesn't know about, what would that actually look like? And do we have the wherewithal? Do we have the guts to go and continue to do what we see has been done when the books have been opened? I'm not entirely sure of that. It would actually have to be, and to create a system of justice is what I think we ultimately want. You know, the police shootings, the gentrification, the economic disparity and deprivation. It would take a complete overhaul of society. And that is scary, because no one can imagine, at least even people that I've talked to that are, I guess you say, on the level, can't even fathom what that would look like. We have an idea, but how that would be implemented, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure, I hate to say that, but I'm pretty sure it would involve, or a system change like that would involve a lot of destruction, death, and just mass chaos. So that's my thoughts on that.
As well as, I don't think people understand when they talk about these environments, what I think is missed, and that's why the whole community thing is funny, and again, funny in the sense that a lot of these little communities that seem to be innocent, like a lot of people are selling this idea that, just say hypothetically, in America you have a nation within a nation. And if you go study natives, yeah, that you'll see how well that works. But anyway, a nation within a nation. And we're doing our own thing, but we're contributing to the system overall. Understanding that a lot of these small towns around the country, they make weapons there. Like a lot of these innocent places that look, oh, you know, they're not into anything. You know, it's just, you know, some people living together in this little community, and, you know, there's no, they are all contributing to mass murder. All of us are contributing to this, period. I'll stop right there. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and go into the break. And once we come back, we would like to start up on one of our clips. The first clip, Mr. Reed, if you have that clip, please get it queued up for us back on the breaks. This is the Code Breakers. Be back in a few.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Well, people are either victims of racism or they are not. Now, that's why I say it's the United Independent System. Some people, non-white people, say that they are not victims of white supremacy, that there is no such thing as white supremacy. Now, the code does not allow me to tell them, you know, to dictate to them that there is. It does allow me to say that there is. See, that's the United Independent. That's the VGQ factor, Victims Guarantee Qualification.
Yes, sir.
I say that I'm a victim of white supremacy. Why? Because white supremacy still exists. Now, there are people who say that it doesn't exist, that that was something that happened in the past, that there was a thing called white supremacy sometimes in the past. Now, I say that as we speak in this moment, 2017, the evidence shows that the system of white supremacy is not in the past. It is present right this moment, that the system of white supremacy does exist. It either does exist or it doesn't. There's no such thing as in between. You either have it or you don't have it. Either you have racism or you don't have racism. Racism has victims. I say on the cover, on the back cover of the book, I have identified myself as a victim of racism. I'm more that than I have ever been anything. And that has never changed by any other title, author of a book or anything like that. Nothing is greater when the name Neely Fuller Jr. comes up in a computer. That's just a name. But nothing is greater. The title that goes with that name, no title is greater than victim of white supremacy. No title that I've ever had has been greater than that title. But that's my evaluation.
Yes, sir.
Now, other people might look at that and say, oh, you're not no victim. You just run around running that game and whatnot. You ain't no victim of racism. Racism don't even exist. That goes way back to, in ancient times and whatnot. I mean, you know, that stuff that you're talking is a bunch of nothing. In fact, one of the first people that looked at the original textbook for victims of racism made just that remark. Said, there's nothing in that book that can help me do anything. And I thanked the person for making that statement because that was that person's view of it. So, in finality, about this discussion, I say that anybody who says that racism doesn't exist, any victim, a person that I would think is a victim of racism, who says they are not, and that they are not victims, and that racism doesn't exist, should just go along with what they believe in. That's, you know, VGQ, Victims Guarantee Qualification. You can say anything you want to about whether or not you are a victim. If everybody in the world who is non-white stands up and say, I'm a victim of racism, and then one black person, one non-white person says, well, the rest of you people can say that you're victims, but I'm not no victim. I'm not no victim of nothing. You're all just making this up. Well, the code says, what should I say about that? I should say the person said what he or she said. The person says that he or she is not a victim, and it's not my job to prove to them that they are. It's not my job. Every person has to determine that for him or herself.
Pretty much end the show on that. Close it up. He sometimes made me think about alcoholics. You know how you never say that you're an alcoholic. You have to finally come to that conclusion on your own. Like that whole process you have to go through. It seems like that, but at a much deeper level, though. It's amazing.
You know, I think to, that... Go ahead, T.
You have to admit the knowledge that there's a problem in order to address it. And that's what I was talking about as far as acknowledging and coming to terms and grips with the fact that there's an ideology out there known as racism and white supremacy. And once we come to grips with that, then we can, I believe, humble ourselves and go about addressing it accordingly
Yeah, one of the main things that I normally get from Mr. Fuller and Dr. Wells, and used to do this also when we used to go to her lectures, it's just clarity. Like, he doesn't sound like a person that is extremely frustrated or defeatist. You know how, you know, it's weird because stand it, you know, closing and Mr. Fuller all the time. Oh, they're defeatists. They're this and that, this and this and that. And these are some of the most calm people that you ever want to meet in your life. Like just to have that kind of stillness, resoluteness. Does Mr. Fuller sound confused to you guys at all? Does he sound like he's wondering if there's a system of racism, white supremacy or not? Like it's just like the clarity that you can receive and the stillness in it. Like, if I look at this in a certain way, you know, I'm not your enemy, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with me or not, and that's what I can take away from it. Like, disagreements are going to be there, but you know, it just seems to be so heavy, and then, you know, leading to our second point. You know, let me just make sure that I have it here. One of the other points that we wanted to discuss was anti-blackness and its effect on solving this problem. And this leads also to ego and money. So I guess we can kind of discuss this also. When victims of racism find each other at odds as far as like what you said and, you know, why you just this, you're a coon, you're a coonette, you're a bed bug. I mean, there's so many words now. It's not even funny. Like, people have monetized this, by the way. Like, it has actually become an industry now, which is part of the ego and money part of it. That we have a situation now where we have pretty much become what's the word that I'm looking for? It's not solution based, but we have basically become a situation where we have become stagnant in trying to really, really solve the problem of racism, or less honest, so to speak. And this is everybody. This is not just the people that are probably a little bit more problematic than others. I think that, you know, a lot of the reason why we find ourselves in the situation as far as like always at odds with each other is the frustration of how the system is. And instead of admitting what the truth is, you know, white people kill for fun. Literally. Like, and there's no protection for you. Like, there's no way that we can protect you from them. Like, there's no group of black people that's going to come and save you as a group. Like, that hasn't been allowed as of yet. Like, when somebody dies in the street, when somebody gets killed in the street, and we know that this police shooting is unjust, is there a cavalry somewhere that's going to go to the police department and you know, basically tell the police officer, hey, you know, we need to get justice or else? Or are we just basically asking people? We're asking.
So in response, where you just start messing up, throwing up everything, you know, knocking everything down in your environment, typically all you kind of can do, and which is what you're typically going to see in most cases so far that I've seen.
So what ends up happening is, who are the people that you can go with?
Let me just say this, because there is no way you can lock up these many black people, and they just end there. And you know, I won't say no more than that, but yeah, it's interesting that it's not, including myself. I'm not more upset. I'm not more physically prepared. You know, I'm not ready to deal with, like, man, you got a lot of us in jail. And they taught some of us how to accept that, but it's interesting. Gotcha. That to me is one of the most fascinating tail signs that you've been able to put these many of my so-called people away.
Gotcha.
And I'm not turning these places apart. Forget everything else. That's just raw as it can get, right? But I hold right there on that.
So you remember when we was in one of the lectures with Dr. Wells, and shout out to the Blackburn Center. In fact, it's coming up this Thursday. We will be in the building. The Code Breakers will be in the building this Thursday. Sharon is doing fantastic work. But you remember when Dr. Wells was lecturing, and then, you know, there was a gentleman that sat there, and it was the same thing that came up about, you know, I don't care with none of these people. You know, these white folks come up in here, they ain't doing nothing that they say. And Dr. Welsing, very calmly, as she customarily does, she calms us down and she gives us a reality check. She said, "Hold on." She said, "You know very well, if there was a police SWAT team that came in here, guns drawn, and they said, 'Stick 'em up,' everybody hands are going to do what? What did she say? Everybody hands, how she be? Everybody hands going up in the air.
And they'll march you out to the van."
This is what this is. Like, there's no illusion here. Like,
we do have a few radicals that will sacrifice themselves for us. You know, I don't know what that number is, but
that's Mecca.
They're definitely out.
Hold
there.
On, that's Mecca. That's an individual decision. That's Mecca. That's no doubt about it. Absolutely. That will sacrifice themselves.
You know what gets white men very excited? You know what gets them very excited, I've noticed? Is a collection of people who come together to fight. Like, they get excited. Like, if you look at the last 10 years of this so-called warfare, or this massacre, I'll call it, it's like they enjoy it. Like, you know, we like killing and we have fun doing this. It's wonderful. You know, and we thank all you non-whites in America and in Europe for supporting us. Appreciate you.
They justify by trying to survive. This group is fighting for a survival. They have genetics that's fighting against them. They have the planet fighting against them. I mean, they have to stack the deck.
It's fighting. I've seen five.
They have to stack the deck. They have to. If you're talking about whatever their qualifications for whiteness, we know that it's very, very fragile. It's a very, very fragile line for whiteness. So it excludes pretty much everybody else. You just basically say everybody else is just a person of color, right?
Pretty much.
That basically, if you're not this certain group, which is a very small group of white people, then basically you're not going to be falling into the classification of white.
Yeah. If we remove them off this planet, the air will be cleaner. It'll be less murder. Things will be more organized, more harmonious. Harmonious? And I think that you will see collaboration, agreements, and things in place to benefit all. I think the major issue on this planet is white people. People who have classified themselves as white, people who operate and function as a white person on this planet, have convinced pressure and push non-white to participate and to assist in the destruction of this planet. Because, see, what people don't understand is that regardless what happens to black people, regardless if white folks decide to stick us in gas chambers, regardless of what happens to other people on this planet, you know, many of us are going to have to sacrifice to save this place, to put ourselves out there, just because these people, their whole, if you really look at things, it's a twisted thing, because for them to survive requires them to destroy the planet at the same time. I can't understand that paradox, but that's just what it is. Just look at their resource behavior, human capital and animal capital, plant capital, and air capital. Just look at the mindset and how they look at all of those things, how they manage it and how they consume it, and how they've convinced non-whites to consume it. There's a much, much bigger thing going on. Now, I know individually you want to save yourself, you want to save your family, do what you got to do. Larger scale, this is for the minority of people. This is for the minority of the minority of people who have the brain power, the understanding, and the willpower to really get what we're talking about. I'll stop right there.
Go ahead. I'm good.
So to drive home that point about the enormity of it, I was watching news on CNN. Anthony Bourdain, and he travels, you know, various foreign countries, what have you. Anyway, he was in the country of Lao, I think they call it there, the natives, or Laos, which is near Vietnam and Cambodia. And the U.S. government ran something called the Secret War. And it was a bombing campaign from 1964 to 1973. The U.S. military literally dropped more than 10 million bombs on Laos. Now, mind you, Laos wasn't even directly involved in the Vietnam conflict. And they did 580,000 bombing missions. And looking at the stats, they say that's equal to a plane load of bombs every 8 minutes, 24 hours a day for 9 years, making Laos the most heavily bombed country per capita in the history of the world. More bombs dropped on Laos than in World War II. So can you imagine living in a place where every 8 minutes you can literally look at your watch and say, here comes a plane load of bombs. Okay, it's 8 minutes now. It's 8 minutes later. Here comes another plane load, and you do this every 8 minutes for 24 hours, every day for 9 years, consistently. That's the magnitude of this thing. And there's, to this day, there still have casualties from these cluster bombs that they dropped that did not explode when they dropped them. A lot of these bombs are dropped simply because the planes couldn't carry these bombs where they were landing, so they just unloaded everything. They said, "The hell with it, let's just unload my payload, and I'm going to go land my plane since I can't land with the payload anyway. Let me just let it go for this landmass here. Never mind who's living there, what they're doing. I'm just going to drop these bombs anyway."
And they're having the same issue, and they're having the same issue in the Marshall Islands as well. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do with those people, if they're going to let them all come over here because they bombed out their land, use it for testing, actually. Big massive issue.
So when you
understanding their behavior, understanding again, we're only talking about and want people to listen to this program who have the capacity to process and understand what we're talking about. I don't care that you have problems with your mama, with black women. I don't care. You got issues that's individual. Don't care. Don't waste time. You know, go somewhere else. You can find plenty of things to talk about that stuff. What we're talking about is a system called racism, white supremacy. It's a global system, and trying to dismantle it, trying to understand it, is a lifetime task in itself. that's where the focus is going to be when you're listening to this particular program. Don't care if you're trying to collect gold coins or whatever the hell you're trying to do to function, survive, trying to exploit other non-whites, whatever you think you're doing, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. We're not here for that. You know, we understand that those things are going to happen. Non-whites are going to con each other. I mean, you're a part of white supremacy. You're copying their behavior. You don't know any better.
You only know how to mistreat.
But you're never going to say that. You're thinking what you're doing is a good thing. It's a good job. I'm successful. That's fine. I'm not here to judge. It's no big deal. Just don't tune in. I'm dead serious about that. That's just my perspective. I don't care. Do not tune in. The focus is only on people who have the capacity to understand really what we're really trying to drive home and can help us. You know, help, you know, think tanks trying to just get an understanding, push out the information into the ether, and hope our future family would get a hold of this information and it would drive behavior. There's people on the planet right now who reject the West. It's a small group of them. And I believe they're going to spend another 1,000 years fighting it. And, you know, we have to understand that that's another tale about what this thing is. But it's a tale in the sense to understand what they're willing to do day in and day out, period. And it's a black and white, cut and dry thing. Ain't nothing to talk about. Understanding that it can be a challenge as well, because it seems senseless. But I will say this. When these people came up with this system, when they came up with these ideas, I'm sure they didn't know what was going to happen. And this is where we are now. And I think going forward, to dismantle this thing, to bring it to its knees, it will happen. And I think that us trying to get an understanding of it, I hope will help the few create some clarity, put some ideas out there, some thoughts up. I just wanted to say that real quick.
Well, the thing about a system falling, all these systems and all these empires, the thing about an empire that's unjust, and just like Mr. Fuller has stated before, that, you know, there hasn't been we haven't tried out justice as of yet fully on this planet that's been recorded, you know, in recorded history. Now, you know, people can take that how they want to take it. But it is what it is. The thing about this particular system and what makes it so interesting is that they're going to destroy themselves in this system. This is the Planet of the Apes. This is they already basically did plenty of movies about it. They know that pretty much the way that they're going, as far as like how they operate, is the system basically going to collapse within itself. You know, white people know that capitalism doesn't benefit everybody. They know that it's a failed system. They have a full, complete understanding of that. I have stated before, there's a book by, I think his name is Frank Peretti. If I'm not mistaken, Capitalism in the 21st Century. That is a very, very, very interesting book. Not to say that I agree with all of it, but as far as the economic piece and how he describes how economics is in the 21st century, it is very, very accurate. And Mr. Reed, if you would be so kind, sir, as to play the last two clips of Mr. Fuller, and then I think we have another break coming up after that.
Just waiting on the clip to load up.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
System of white supremacy, the money doesn't mean anything except whatever the white supremacists want it to mean. So if black people have money in the system of white supremacy, that money comes from the white supremacists. And if black people themselves fashion something, say diamonds or gold or tin or rocks, some black person might say, well, I'm going to pick up these rocks, these quartz rocks, and I'm going to say that quartz rocks is money. I'm going to say that rocks are money. Why? Because I'm going to say it. That's my choice. And in my country, we're going to have rocks for money. Now, that black person can do that. But the white supremacists will have to approve of it in order for it to be functioning as money. You know, the white supremacists will take one look at those rocks and say, well, now, first of all, you black person, you non-white person, you're saying that it's money. But it's not money until I say that it's money. Because your money doesn't mean anything. I don't care if you how much of it you print, how you stack it up. I mean, you can stack it up to the moon. It means nothing until I say it means something. So all money is valued by the white supremacists when it comes to non-white people. Because they set the values on all money. And how can they do this? By setting the value on people. When you control people, you control everything that the people have that they say is theirs, because it's really not theirs. I can't say that as a person of color, a non-white person, I can't say that my house is mine because I paid for it.
But what you do is just get more and more strength. We're on a battlefield. The white supremacists have made the entire planet a battlefield. They have also made it a prison. And they have made prisoners of war all of the people that they classify as non-white. We were born in prison. So therefore, in a prison, nothing is comfortable. I often, recently I've been using a scene from the movie Saving Private Ryan. And I think the officer played in that movie is about a battlefield. And, there's an officer called Captain Miller, played by Tom Hanks. And he's talking to this sniper that's in his unit called Jackson, I believe. And they are looking at this, what appears to be a radar site. In one of the scenes in the movie after the Normandy landings in World War II. And so they are contemplating whether or not to attack this German radar site. So there's a conversation going on between them and the other members of that combat unit operating behind German lines. And so the conversation sort of gelled into this. They said, well, we're going to attack this place because I've made that decision. And so then the sniper says to the captain, he says, well, Captain, I don't feel good about this one, meaning this mission. And the captain responded by saying, when is the last time you felt good about anything? Meaning we just came through that D-Day, 6th of June, 1944, Normandy landing, and now we are behind enemy lines, and here's a radar site, and we have a little small unit here of maybe six or seven people, and we're going to attack it, make a surprise attack, and that's not even our mission, our reason for being here. I mean, because we've been given another assignment, and that is to find Private Ryan. And so you're saying to ignore this and go around and continue what our direct assignment is. But our assignment is to win the war. And you're talking about your feelings. And so he asked the question. And that's why I'm fast-forwarding now.
Yes.
To right now. When is the last time that black people are supposed to feel good about anything? We are born in prison. It's not about feeling good. We are born in a prison that we shouldn't have been in, but we were born in that prison, and that prison is a battlefield. And we are not supposed to feel good. When is the last time we felt good about anything? If you felt good, you were feeling good about a situation that you weren't supposed to be feeling good about, because you're in a prison that you weren't supposed to be in, because you were convicted without having done anything, except you were a person of color and someone said that you had committed a crime by being a person of color, and they put you in a prison called a prison called a system of white supremacy, and that's where we are. So I said all of that to get back to that one question. All problems are solved through questions and answers. When is the last time you felt good about anything? Well, any time you felt good about anything, you weren't supposed to, because your soldier, captured soldier on a battlefield, you're a prisoner of war, and you have already been made a prisoner of war on that battlefield. So what is there to feel good about? So what we're going to do is to carry out the mission, regardless of how anybody feels. What is that mission? To get rid of this battlefield, get rid of this war, by getting rid of the system of white supremacy. And we ain't supposed to feel good about it or feel anything about it except what the mission is.
Yes, sir.
That's the logic.
In 2008, the Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform, Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Code Breakers. So what did you guys think about the clips?
Couldn't have said it better myself, that's for sure. So well said. Especially the battlefield. What about the battlefield clip where, you know, because we have a, I think as so-called black people, we have a tendency to get in our feelings, and as he said, it's not about your feelings, it's about the mission, ultimately. Don't give a damn about your feelings. Let's just accomplish this. You gotta get this mission done, because feelings in battle will get you killed. You start getting in your face, you start feeling a certain way about something, and you, instead of getting up and moving to the next cover, you start hesitating. And in the process, you catch a hop. So feelings are definitely not. You want to react and go off instinct. If you want a football field, same thing. Any sports arena. I'll just use a football field as an example. If I'm a safety and I'm back there, and it's third and five. And I feel like they're going to run, and they do play, and I'm caught biting and coming up to the line, and they go deep on me, guess what? I may have just lost the game. That might be a bad analogy using sports, but I know a lot of us can relate to that, so I'll use it anyway.
You got anything, Paradox?
I'll just say it's interesting. I was laughing because he started talking about making rocks, giving rocks value to be able to to obtain goods and services. So I thought that was that's always fun when someone says, when you think about how the complexity, but then the primitiveness of it as well. Maybe not primitiveness, but just the humanness of it. You know, that, you know, the value that you put into your environment, and then how you can use things within the environment and turn it into something, and then make it, you know, create energy around it, and then make it, you know, take it from being something similar to rock and calling it gold, silver, platinum, and then infusing that into a society, you know, wrap things in a very pristine sense, like, you know, rings and buildings and, you know, et cetera, which create, you know, especially when it's coming from a different place, just the image of it, you know, it is interesting. And what you obtain from it, it's impressive that rocks can do what it do. I will say that.
Gold and silver.
Got to give it value. And then once I give it value,
you better have some gold and silver. You better have some gold and silver now.
Time is up forever.
You know.
You need something to trade with.
Carbon, hard carbon. Shine, oh, dang it.
Man, I tell you.
Let me go kill some people over that.
Get your hands out there and dig up them rocks for me so I could place value and sell it across the planet and have other people kill themselves over these things. Even when I sell it in my stores, people try to come in and rob and steal these things that I place value on.
Welcome to human civilization. Don't complain about it.
Participation.
Welcome to South Africa. The beers.
Participation. 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 So, solutions are very, very good. I think that solutions, when I hear solutions, just to kind of take it back to the first talking point, I think that if we give suggestions to other victims of racism, if we're being truthful, then I think that we can get a whole lot further into solving this problem, because then we're not selling illusions of what we're trying to do here. Because basically what we're trying to do most of the time when we give people solutions is survival tactics. Like, hey, this is what I need, this is what I do to survive, and I get myself more comfortable within the system, and maybe this will work for you too. No guarantees, though. I can't guarantee you anything. I'm just telling you what I do. And hopefully, you don't draw attention to me. Because if you draw attention to me, then that means they're going to shut all of us down. So I got to make sure that I charge you or do something. Because I can't be giving these solutions out for free. Or suggestions out for free to benefit too many people within the system. And I think that what is going to come down to, all points lead to the same place. And I think overall that's what I want to kind of give a summary about. Everything leads to the same thing. At the end of the day, we're going to be faced with, what are we going to do about the system of racism, white supremacy? And then how can we get these people that have classified themselves as white neutralized, and basically out of the actual destruction of this particular planet? We're gonna have to end up dealing with that hard factor. And see, like, a lot of times what ends up happening is when you get into these discussions, people will say, well, you know, you spend too much time on something that's too big, that's too vague, I mean, it's very, very clear. I mean, you know, there are clear things that are happening that you can get to the particular point where if you start to discuss it on a mass level, then you will be identified. Now, I'm not saying that you'll be protected once you're identified, but well, you will be identified, and it will be something that will be on their radar. But all points lead to the same place. At the end of the day, if we really want to solve the problem for so-called victims of racism, especially those that are mistreated the most, which are the darker human beings, or the human beings that was so-called in the bloodline of those that are darker human beings that are classified or fall into the classification or forced into the classification of black people, we struggle the most. I think there's no ambiguity on that. Like, globally, we're the ones that stuck at the bottom. So if we're talking about dealing with our people overall, the people that we're forced into the group in, and if we're talking about benefiting our people, then all points lead to dealing with this system. Now, we can deal with pain points and, you know, I got an economic problem, I got a representation problem. Yeah, those are all good. Those are survival and coping techniques. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to get the children prepared on how to deal with this particular system, because this system will come to a halt. Either it will be destroyed, or it will basically get handled by somebody else. But it will come down. But after that, what is next? What is next for this particular system? What do people have designs on? Do we move towards the system of justice, or do we want to be just like the people that preceded us? Do we want to be like white people? That's the question. Do we want to be white? Do we want to kill people, mass murder people, and force them into a certain type of ideology? Is that what we want to do? Or do we believe in justice? Oh, justice is impossible. That's some stupid stuff. What are you talking about? But yeah, people that classify themselves as white is real stupid too. That's real stupid. That doesn't really make any logical sense. There's no technically, outside of them forcing you to believe in something like that, that doesn't make any sense at all. Just like calling people from the continent of Africa black, that's from thousands and thousands of different tribes. And the same thing with the native peoples here. Like, that don't make too much sense either. But it's a reality now. Because of what? Because of ideology. It's been forced upon us. That's all I'm saying.
A awesome community. What about the gender divide?
I wanted to save that because I know that that's a whole nothing.
I'm not sure. I know you like to get your teeth into that one.
No, not today. I mean, we could get into it, but I think that a lot of that has to do with what do we believe in? Who is basically, what design are we following? I mean, Paradox alluded to it earlier. Who do we follow? Who are we learning from? Who do we want to be? Where are we getting these ideals from? Like, where is this coming from exactly?
Right.
Like, what's generating this so-called people that should be working together, because we are forced into the same classification, right? We are dealing with the same issue. It's just like we alluded to on the previous program. We have different pain points. That's really what it comes down to. But your pain point is due to the system of racism, white supremacy. But see, you're going to have people to say, well, the system of racism, white supremacy doesn't exist, just like what Mr. Fuller just said. But then they're going to still talk around it, but then they'd be like, well, yeah, you know what, racism do exist, but it don't exist the way you say it does. You see what I'm saying? Like, it can even get down to that, and then you have people totally in disagreement. And Mr. Reed brought this to my attention earlier, the LeBron James situation, right? You have a victim of racism, Jason Whitlock. He gets on television and says, well, LeBron James did not experience an act of racism. Why? Because he makes too much money. Now, think about that. Another victim of racism that's on TV, right? Describing the mistreatment of another victim of racism. And he's saying that that's not really racism because he makes too much money. That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with.
He would probably go for the economic argument.
But then the same victim would say, but racism do exist though. Just not for him. I mean, make that make sense. Like the fact that just because they did this to LeBron James, and the fact that it's actually known that this was done to LeBron James, and that they spray painted whatever, coon or jigaboom or whatever they, nigger or whatever they basically sprayed on his actual garage, how that actually has an adverse effect. We talked about ideology. We talk about things being done, right? That there's a pattern of behavior that people follow. And I know that he don't believe this, but if people say, if it can happen to LeBron James, then think about what is going to happen to us when we deal with someone that is dedicated to the system of racism and white supremacy and would like to physically do something about it at that particular time. The last program we had, we spoke about the gentleman that was about to graduate from Bowie State. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't think he was poor either, right? Victim of racism, killed on University of Maryland's campus. See, Jason Whitlock's logic on the whole situation don't hold up. It's an emotional argument. It's an individual argument. It doesn't have anything to do with what the system is in totality. This is a genetic survival system based off mistreatment of those that they consider to be not white, which means that they have stacked the deck with the 9 areas of activity, right? 9 areas of activity being education, economics. We have basically all these areas of activities that they basically stacked the deck on, but we have victims still saying that, hey, you know, victims of racism, you can price yourself out of being mistreated. It is what it is, man.
Yeah, my suggestion is that next time that happens to someone, that they get a so-called racial slur tag spray painted on their property, leave it on there. Especially if it's a celebrity, leave it on there, and then we'll see the reaction, how it turns against the victim. And they'll say, sir, ma'am, why are you leaving this racial slur up? Why don't you just, you know, paint over it, get it removed? That would be interesting to see how it turns against the victim. It's to make them seem like they're at fault now. Mm-hmm. Because they're leaving it up when they want to display the disgusting and the nasty ideology that pervades the world, in fact. Racism, white supremacy. But leave it up. Just like Emmett Till's mother had an open casket to show the nasty, dastardly, and devious and just downright disgusting deeds that were done to her son. Do the same thing. We'll see what happens.
Which Emmett Till's mother and their family has been politicized, by the way, and that's something that we should be codified on also. It's just certain things that we just should not do, but you know, in my view, and I know there's disagreements about it, we don't, there's no checks and balances. There's all kinds of things that are just being allowed to happen, and that's why I say that when it comes down to it, what exactly are we talking about here when we talk about solutions? That's all.
Right. No, the reason why I brought that up is because LeBron mentioned it.
No, I agree. I agree with LeBron, but I don't think that he meant it in that light. But what I'm saying is they have politicized it, and the back and forth is, well, how dare he bring up Emmett Till's mother? You know, that's not an actual fair comparison. He's using that to basically make you feel sorry for him, like he's a victim, like Emmett Till's mother. And I don't think that, you know, LeBron James is way smarter than that. I don't think that he would even equate what happened to him to be the same as what took place on his property. He was reiterating a point of how racism is basically permeated within the society and what it leads to. But, you know, that doesn't get discussed overall. Of course, we just fall into the whole platform. We got a platform to speak, and we got a platform to go against other victims of racism. Go have at it. It's a gladiator sport. It's what we do best. But you know what we don't do? We don't talk about white problems. We don't talk about white people. We don't focus on white people. We're too focused on ourselves. That's problematic. That is problematic.
Part of the ideology is not to focus on white people, though.
Oh, no, I get it. And that's the point that, you know, they say, well, if you're too focused on white people, then you're not dealing with your problem. But the thing is that a lot of this that is built up and that's systemic, things that are done now, the reasons why you have school districts that are totally outfunded, gentrified neighborhoods, redlining communities, the slave catcher brigade in every particular state where they have officers basically capture black males and black women on a regular basis and put them in concentration camps. The reason why you have this going on is because we believe we can act ourselves out of this particular issue. We can act a certain way. We can rise above it all. We can rise above their genetic protection on themselves. Like the system basically is the genetic code to protect themselves, basically, genetically. So how can you combat that when somebody basically justifies their actions through protecting their genetics, either subconsciously or consciously? They're fully aware of this. Because guess what? If justice truly existed, and if we was all considered equal, right? If they really believed in that, then guess what? This is what Dr. Wilson said. I mean, I'm not trying to say that everybody should get with white people. That's not what I'm saying. But technically, white people would not exist. They wouldn't. Or it would be so few of them that it wouldn't even matter. It would just be like, everybody is basically going to be brown to light skinned or whatever. It's just going to look, if it's going to be people of color, it's not going to be white people on this planet. They have to genetically do things. They got to do things. They got to operate a certain way to protect their genetics. And in my opinion, that's what this is about. That's what racism is about to me. The people that are classified themselves as white are trying to physically remain on this particular planet, and they're going to do anything in their power to remain that way. That's why you see Richard Spencers of the world. That's why you see these people killing. That's why you see police officers overall just killing certain people on a regular basis. I thought he had a gun. Psychological. It's psychological. That's why you see countries that are full of people that are of color get bombed on a regular basis. 10,000 people just wiped out. 3,000 people just wiped out. Gone off the face of the planet. No fear of those genetics getting mixed in. Anyway, those are my final thoughts. I would just say that, you know, hopefully, I know this program was was probably stung a couple of you guys as far as like listening, but hopefully you would do the research for yourself, understand the system as a whole, and you know, be more empathetic to white, to black people, to other victims of racism. Everybody has a different pain point. You guys have any other final thoughts?
No, you did
your thing. My final thoughts would be, again, racism, white supremacy is an ideology, and so it should be countered as such. So I would employ, this includes myself, is to study more into ideologies and how they are countered.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, don't forget that Dr. Curry's book's coming out July 1st. I think you can still pre-order it. It might already be on Backboard. I don't know. But definitely go online and try to find his book. I think it's going to be called The Man Not. So I just wanted to say that.
Cool. Yeah. So I mean that's pretty much all I had to leave is the ideology part, and how the fact that the U.S. empire is meddling ideology. You hear them say that all the time. Radical Islam, quote unquote. Funny how they never mentioned that racism, white supremacy, even racism, if you want to use that, the qualifier is the ideology. Everything else is, though. But that's all I have. But yeah.
Well, this is the Code Breakers. Thank you for listening. I'm D.
Paradox.
Until next time, peace.